Live from the Evanston Lakefront, I'm Iris Swarthout. You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1, Evanston, Chicago. It's Monday, March 7th, 2022. On tonight's show, a breakdown of Russia's invasion of Ukraine with a Northwestern faculty member, a look into the Netflix miniseries Inventing Anna, and what students are doing now that season 2 of Euphoria is over. Those stories and more coming up right now. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday evening. Tonight is our last news break of the quarter, so thanks for listening over the past few months. In Campus Local tonight, Russia's invasion of Ukraine poses a humanitarian, economic, and political crisis. Northwestern's ambassador-in-residence in the International Studies Program, Ian Kelly, breaks down the situation with WNUR reporter Justine Fisher.
Russia's recent invasion of Ukraine has devastated the country and continues to have profound impact both regionally and across the globe. I spoke with Northwestern's ambassador-in-residence with the Program in International Studies, Ian Kelly, to better understand the situation. Kelly is the former U.S. ambassador to Georgia and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Kelly says the conflict has been brewing for years. A change in government from what Putin perceived as pro-Russian to pro-Western led to the annexation of Crimea in 2014. Since then, there has been low-intensity conflict in the region. But he describes a recent list of demands that gives insight into Putin's motivations.
In July, Putin put out a long essay claiming that Ukraine is actually Russian, that Ukraine and Russia are one country, and gave a long, dense historical explanation for why Ukraine is not a state, basically. Then in November, he started his buildup around Ukraine, and in December, made some demands on the U.S. and NATO.
In terms of the geopolitical landscape, Kelly says we're already seeing policies of 75 years changing almost overnight.
And probably most dramatic is Germany. The Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, he said Putin has succeeded in erasing Germany's historical guilt, when that historical guilt led to them, you know, not wanting to arm Ukraine, not wanting to spend a lot on military. And so he announced they were doubling the military budget, which is mind-blowing. And we're going to send lethal weapons to Ukraine. You had Switzerland, which for 200 years has refused to join sanctions, refused to block any kind of bank accounts. They didn't block the Nazi regime's accounts. They announced they were going to join the sanctions. You had Sweden, which has been steadfastly neutral, didn't aid Britain when it was, you know, when there was the Blitz. It actually aided Germany, provided Germany with, natural resources and steel. They announced that they're going to arm Ukraine. That's a first.
Kelly says while sanctions clearly weren't a deterrent, their impact has been more extensive than Putin predicted.
In the long term, it's terrible for Russia. They're basically cut off from the international system. They're one big North Korea now. And, you know, Russia is a European country that's been integrated into Europe economically, you know, in the banks, credit cards, ability to travel. They can't travel anymore either. Airlines aren't flying to Moscow. Credit cards don't work.
Kelly also discussed possible solutions.
One very easy, no-brainer type action they can take, and that is to reinforce NATO's eastern flank, which they're doing, and to stress that the alliance will, as they say, defend every inch of NATO territory. The difficult thing, of course, is they've also said they're not going to send NATO troops. I mean, we basically have kind of an asymmetrical approach to trying to stop Putin. He's using military force, we're using economics. And like I say, that's not matching strength for strength there necessarily.
Given Putin's threats against Western intervention, Kelly emphasizes the complexity of the situation.
And it's going to be hard to see Ukrainian civilians under siege, bombarded, and not be able to get them the kind of humanitarian help that they need. So, yeah, it's a very, very difficult situation. The biggest crisis in Europe, really, since World War II, I would say.
Support for Ukrainians has been widespread.
There was a vote in the General Assembly of the UN today, and out of the, 150 or so countries, only five countries voted not to condemn Russia. Even Russia's allies, like Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Armenia, Cuba, abstained, didn't vote against it.
Ukraine's President Zelensky yesterday addressed the EU and was accepted for immediate membership with a standing ovation.
There's a famous line by President Kennedy about Churchill during the Blitz, and his use of his speeches and his use of language. And he said that Churchill militarized the English language, lined them up lined words up in sentences and sent them off to battle. And this is what Zelensky's doing. Multiple times he said, I'm still here, I'm not going anywhere. If Putin uses all his force, he's not going to survive, and he knows that. But he's just, it really is just... He has become a world hero, and provided a stark contrast to his adversary, who's holed up.
Even here on campus, students painted the rock and raised thousands of dollars to support Ukraine. The university also hosted teach-ins, one of which Kelly participated in recently. In Evanston, Illinois, Justine Fisher, WNUR News.
Moving on to arts and entertainment, the new Netflix miniseries, Inventing Anna, covers the crazy life of real-life con artist and ex-socialite Anna Delvey. Listen to reporter Pari Pradhan as she takes you through how Delvey lied her way into hundreds of thousands of dollars and the inner circles of the New York elite in this new drama created by Shonda Rhimes.
Inventing Anna is a new miniseries that debuted on Netflix on February 11th. Based on the real-life story of Anna Sorokin, who used to go by the name of Anna Delvey, the show covers how Delvey managed to trick the New York elite into believing that she was one of them. Delvey managed to work her way into the inner circle of Manhattan's elite through an elaborate web of lies and honestly impressive posturing. She posed as a German heiress and traveled to New York for the first time in 2013 for New York Fashion Week. This is where her deception began. It all started in a sleek new hotel, 11 Howard in Soho, frequented by celebrities, where Delvey befriended certain members of the staff by handing them $100 bills every time she saw them. She spent her money with the sort of carelessness that insinuated an endless supply, an air of invincibility only possessed by the rich. Soon enough, Delvey had worked her way into the social circles of everyone who mattered. She would host lavish parties for CEOs, artists, celebrities, anyone with a modicum of influence. Through the years of 2013 to 2017, Delvey was everywhere and she knew everyone. The most fascinating thing about Delvey is that she faked her way to the top, not by flaunting the most extravagant clothes, jewelry, and other symptoms of wealth, but through the art of understatement. There is a long-standing compartmentalization of the extreme upper class into two categories, new money and old money. New money refers to those who have very recently come into their wealth. Their excitement over their newfound riches leads to an aesthetic of opulence, blatant designer bags, ordering the most expensive bottle of wine at every restaurant. New money lets their money talk. Old money, however, refers to generational wealth, to a lineage of luxury so long that they no longer have anything to prove. These are the people whose last names get them a table at any restaurant they wish, who wear $100 socks that no one can see just because they can. Wealth whispers. New money is luxury, old money is power. Delvey knew this, and as a result, she had mastered the art of deception, not just as the 1%, but as the top dogs within this upper class. Delvey's style was an expression of this. While she was known to spend tens of thousands of dollars, that she didn't actually have, on personal trainers and in New York's fanciest restaurants, Delvey often stuck to a Supreme hoodie and leggings for her day-to-day fashion. As fashion critic Rachel Tajin once said about Delvey, she didn't look like her outfit cost $1 million, and that's why she looked like she had $1 million. The real Delvey, or shall we say Sorokin, came from humble beginnings. She grew up in a working-class family in Moscow, the child of a truck driver and convenience store worker. She went on to attend, and then drop out of, art school in London, and eventually went on to be an intern at a fashion magazine in Berlin, where she still needed her parents' assistance to pay her rent. So where did she get the money to put on this act? Well, to be frank, she didn't. While Delvey did blow cash on hotel staff and designer hoodies, she only ever paid in cash, and frequently avoided reimbursing her rich friends for the thousands of dollars they would spend on her to take her on lavish trips and such. But in these circles of such high opulence, losing track of a few thousand dollars here and there simply didn't matter, so nobody caught on. Anna also avoided paying for services, her hotel bills, designers she had hired for personal projects, etc. She left them all with promises that she would wire transfer the money, but always seemed to have complications when it came to the actual execution of the transfer. However, her high status protected her from the consequences of her actions, and left behind a long line of people and companies waiting patiently for her to pay them back. When she did have to pay for things, she would steal from her socialite peers and financial institutions, going on to con them out of hundreds of thousands of dollars to pay for her lifestyle and to stay within their inner circle. However, in some time, Delvey's methods of payment had been rejected enough that two hotels had completely kicked her off their premises and reported of her fraud. By the next day, her upper-class support system that often paid off her bills was gone, and her web of lies began to unravel. It was revealed that she filed claims to several banks stating that she had a net worth of $60 million locked away in Swiss accounts. She did this in attempts of acquiring $20 to $30 million loans, and she managed to convince banks to give her up to $100,000 at a time. On multiple occasions, Delvey filed bad checks and withdrew the money before they were returned. Eventually, her fraudulent activity caught up with her, and Delvey was arrested in 2017 for defrauding major financial institutions, banks, hotels, and her peers. She has been in prison since then, but worked on the new Netflix miniseries based on her own life, Inventing Anna, from within prison walls. Delvey was given $320,000 for the rights to her story, which she used to pay her legal fees. If you're interested in checking out this show that follows the crazy story of Anna Delvey, now known as Anna Sorokin, you can check the show out on Netflix now. For WNUR News, this was Pari Pradhan, signing off.
For those who just finished Euphoria, Inventing Anna might just be the next show for you. Speaking of which, for the past 2 months, students have flocked to their TVs every Sunday evening to watch the new Euphoria episode. Reporter Pass Baum covers what students are up to now that Euphoria's Cassie and Nate drama is no longer televised weekly on HBO. Listen to students' postseason finale hobbies up here next.
It's Sunday night, 8:54 p.m. You stop your reading. You know that it takes exactly 6 minutes to walk downstairs, plug your computer into the TV monitor's HDMI cable, and load HBOMax.com. On the HBO website, under Continue Watching, you look for the familiar title Euphoria. For some reason, the show's icon is not there. It's okay, you search for it. This puts you a few seconds behind schedule, but you accept that and click on the icon that appears. Only, you've already seen the episode that starts playing. At that moment, you realize there's no new episode. An odd feeling of emptiness settles into your stomach. With no Euphoria available, what will you do for the next hour? What will you do next Sunday? College students and other viewers around the globe have developed a tradition over the last 2 months. Every Sunday evening, they sit around the TV screen and watch the newest Euphoria episode. Since the show first aired in 2019, it has steadily grown its fan base. Now, 2 seasons and a few special intermediate episodes later, teenagers are obsessed. Curious about this obsession, I talked to some Northwestern students about the significance behind their weekly viewing parties and their plans for future Sundays devoid of Euphoria. Tunji, a first year in Medill, watched every new episode in his dorm lounge with some friends. He was unimpressed with season 2, stating that it
did not meet expectations. While the show didn't have incredible amounts of story, this was, as I've said to many a friend and many a person at our watch party, this season was 70% vibes, 30% story.
Despite disappointment in the show itself, Tunji thoroughly enjoyed spending that quality time with his friends.
I like making watching a show a social event. I think it's nice to share common things with people. I don't really like the binge culture that's arisen from streaming. I prefer much more to like watch shows with people. So then I have people to talk about them with, whether it's for a minute, whether it's for like later in the week. It's nice to have things in common with people.
Rose, another first year, had similar praise for her own viewing parties. Her friends were not caught up on Euphoria, so she watched season 2 on her own as it came out, but she does get together with her friends to watch The Bachelor every Monday.
As much as you do enjoy the show, it's really just an excuse to all go hang out together and like laugh and talk over the show kind of the entire time. I feel like even though we're watching something together, it's really just about hanging out and like spending more time together on a given night.
Both Tunji and Rose pointed out the break that watching a show with their friends offered them from the stress of schoolwork and other obligations.
You have something to look forward to, and I appreciate that. The serotonin of like getting everyone together and then going downstairs keeps me motivated, like on a Sunday.
It's really just about hanging out and like spending more time together on a given night and kind of using it as an excuse to be like, okay, yeah, I have homework tonight and like I shouldn't be hanging out with people, but you know, there's something to do, so I'm gonna use that as an excuse to go hang out and spend time with my friends, which is always worth it in my mind.
Because Tunji and Rose dedicated a chunk of every Sunday to Euphoria for the past 2 months, I knew that they would have some free time in the near future. I had to know what they would be watching to fill that time.
House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm also excited to watch The Boys season 3.
I really want to watch The Americans next.
Will these dedicated viewers continue their viewing party traditions for House of the Dragon, The Americans, and Euphoria season 3?
Oh, I hope so. I feel like all of my friends watch it and we all like talk about it so much that I would not be surprised if there was a season 3 viewing party.
I think that I will be doing watch parties for other things. House of the Dragon, HBO, Invincible, season 2, season 3 of The Boys, but that's in the summer.
Because of the chokehold that Euphoria has on this generation, one essential piece of information I needed from my interviewees was this. What does a post-Euphoria season 2 world look like for them? A world without new insights into the lives of Ru, Jules, Maddie, and Cassie every Sunday.
A post-Euphoria world is a world that was the same. Is there like something that gives me like happiness on a Sunday night? Yeah, there's Attack on Titan. I'm fine.
I feel like Sunday nights, I'm just gonna be like disappointed.
It turns out that maybe the Euphoria obsession had less to do with the plot and more to do with the community created around watching the show. Either way, we'll keep our eyes out for season 3. In the meantime, if you are looking for a way to relax during reading and finals weeks, sit down on the couch with some friends and watch a favorite show together. As our guest noted, it's a great way to spend quality and relaxing time with people you care about. For WNUR News, I'm Passbot.
The State of the Union Address aired last Tuesday as President Biden addressed the war in Ukraine, the American Rescue Plan, and the Economic Progress Report, among other things. But here at NU, our Associated Student Government provides a weekly report on their activities. Listen to reporter Pass Baum cover ASG's latest activity, with students possibly having a shuttle to take them to and from the airport, and Vice President for Student Affairs Julie Payne Kirchmeyer paying a visit to the Senate last Wednesday.
Welcome to State of the NUnion, your weekly ASG Senate coverage. This week, a resolution for a campus airport shuttle and a presentation from JPK. At the beginning and end of every school break, group chats seem to emerge out of nowhere to coordinate rides to and from O'Hare and Midway. Ubers and Lyfts can cost up to $100 from campus to the airport, and the ride on the CTA takes several hours. Many students feel unsafe riding on CTA buses alone, and the travel can be difficult with a lot of luggage. Senator Stephanie Shields' proposed solution to these difficulties is a university-operated shuttle between campus and the airport on high travel days. Senator Shields proposes that the shuttle operate within the university's existing intercampus shuttle system. On Wednesday, Senator Shields introduced the resolution, which senators voted to debate and vote on that same night instead of the following week, which is common practice. The resolution passed by unanimous consent with no debate. This does not mean that from now on a shuttle will operate to and from the airport, but it does mean that the idea will be on the administration's radar. Vice President of Student Affairs Julie Payne Kirchmeyer, commonly known as JPK, spent Wednesday evening with the ASG Senate. She explained the structure and jurisdiction of NU's Student Affairs Department and then discussed ASG's priorities with senators. Some concerns that senators raised include needed improvements to student enrichment services and student medical leave, outdated residential buildings, and a lack of clear communication between administration and students regarding resources available to students. JPK explained the university's ongoing efforts to address these concerns, such as revisiting the residential services master plan from a few years ago that was paused due to issues with funding as well as COVID. That's all for today's State of the NUnion. Check in after spring break to see what ASG has been up to between now and then. For WNUR News, I'm Passbot.
In the headlines today, Northwestern's men's basketball team toppled Minnesota last night, 75-62, at Welsh Ryan Arena. The 15-15 Wildcats are ranked 11th in the Big Ten. They are set to play Nebraska in Indianapolis on Wednesday, a team that upset the top seed Wisconsin team last night, winning 74-73. On-air coverage will be provided by WNUR Sports starting at 5 p.m. Go Cats! Chicago Public Schools are set to drop their mask mandate on March 14 in accordance with Illinois dropping the mandate statewide on February 28. In response, the Chicago Teachers Union are fighting the change and announced Tuesday that they will be filing an unfair labor practice charge against CPS. U.S. basketball star and two-time Olympian Brittany Griner was detained in Russia in February on drug charges. Griner typically plays for the WNBA's Phoenix Mercury, but spends her off-season playing for Russia's UMMC Ekaterinburg. Griner's current whereabouts are unknown, and member of the U.S. House Armed Services Committee said, quote, "It's going to be very difficult," unquote, to retrieve Griner from Russia. 14-year-old Russian gymnast Ivan Kuliak was criticized after wearing a Z symbol next to Ukrainian athlete Ilya Kovtun at the Taishan World Cup Artistic Gymnastics Competition in Doha, Qatar, on Saturday. The symbol represents Russia's propaganda campaign in support of their invasion of Ukraine. Starting today, all Russian and Belarusian gymnastic athletes are banned from participating in the International Gymnastics Federation's competitions until further notice. Taking a look now at the weather. Tonight will be partly cloudy with temperatures dipping to the low 20s into tomorrow morning. Wind speeds will drop to 6 miles per hour overnight. Tomorrow, we will see slightly warmer temperatures with a high of 40 degrees and a low of 29. Sunny skies will prevail throughout the day with cloud cover inching through overnight. Winds will range from 8 to 11 miles per hour. For the rest of the week, we'll hang around the mid-30s with a higher chance of precipitation going into Thursday and Friday. A potential winter storm is on the radar for Friday, as the high will be 32 and the low 14, with a 44% chance of snow and winds between 10 and 20 miles per hour. Make sure to bundle up this next week. Spring hasn't arrived yet. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on our Twitter at WNUR News and on our Instagram, WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other stories of the day on our Spotify, Google Podcasts, and SoundCloud. You can also find us on our website, WNUR.news. Our reporters for today are Justine Fisher, Pari Pradhan, and Paz Baum. Our producer today is Alex Harrison. From all of us here at WNUR News, I'm Iris Swarthout. This is our final news break of the quarter. Thank you for listening. Now, back to scheduled programming.